So good morning. Today I will be introducing a conceptual framework in which we argue that mineral-associated organic matter is a hidden source of nitrogen in agricultural soils. Now, this is a pool of nitrogen we generally think of as unavailable to plants on the short term, but through our conceptual framework we highlight different strategies that plants and microbes could employ to actually access this nitrogen-rich reserve. I also, at the end, will briefly cover some results from experiments that are set up to address some of our main questions and hypotheses. So several studies now report precipitous loss of nitrogen from agricultural soils, where up to 50% of nitrogen inputs are lost to the environment. We also see on the right that up to 40% of fertilizer inputs are retained as biomass. So taken together, these two suggest that a large portion of plant nitrogen is actually acquired from soil-derived pools. Now, why this persistent overapplication of fertilizer? It's possible that current methods that we use to predict this built-in supply of soil bioavailable nitrogen may overlook critical pools or processes. Now, there's a lot of information here, but I want you to focus on the R-squared column and also the corresponding nitrogen index here. But mainly, we're just seeing here this wide range in how well these commonly used nitrogen indices perform when it comes to predicting nitrogen availability or uptake at the field or greenhouse level. They're not always very consistent or reliable predictors of nitrogen supply. A lot of these tend to focus on the inorganic nitrogen pool, such as with the KCl extractable ammonium pool or with the pre-plant nitrate test, as these are the main forms of nitrogen that plants assimilate. And so traditionally, we focused on this inorganic end pool, the rates of production of, say, ammonium or nitrate. But we now know that plants can actively acquire these organic forms of monomers, which is why in 2004 Schimmel and Bennett proposed that we need to reshift our focus to the front end of this model to the depolymerization of soil organic matter to monomers. The idea that this is now the rate limiting step for the overall nitrogen supply in soils. So there's increasing interest then in characterizing the soil organic matter pool and targeting the specific components of this pool that feed into the monomer pool. Since it's such a vast and heterogeneous pool, we tend to use organic matter fractionation to isolate components that are distinct in function or behavior. So we have particulate or sand-sized organic matter that we think of as this kind of immediate source of nutrition for plants, as it's more physically accessible to microbes, not yet incorporated into the soil matrix. And on the other end, we have mineral-associated or silt and clay-sized organic matter, deemed this endpoint to stabilization or this long-term reservoir for nutrients. But when we look at the distribution of nitrogen across fractions, we see that the vast majority of nitrogen is actually held in these mineral-associated organic matter pools, largely a result of kind of persistent cultivation and disturbance that depletes particulate organic matter over time. And at the bottom, we see estimates of the potential nitrogen supply from these fractions, really to just set up the comparison between the amount of nitrogen that can be held in these mineral-associated pools, nearly 3,000, in this soil's case, 3,000 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, versus the amount of nitrogen that we might apply via fertilization in a given year. So really, just to make the point more tangible from an agronomic perspective, just the sheer quantity of nitrogen in this mineral-associated pool. I also want to highlight some key differences between these fractions, where particulate organic matter tends to have a very high carbon to nitrogen ratio, being enriched in these litter fragments and plant residues, and as a result, it's often associated with nitrogen immobilization. So microbes will retain, hold on to this nitrogen when they're in a nitrogen-limiting environment. Mineral-associated organic matter tends to have a much lower carbon to nitrogen ratio. Since it's enriched in microbial byproducts and necromass, we have these proteins, amino sugars, say, and as a result, it's often associated with nitrogen mineralization. So we have this interesting discrepancy between our historical understanding of particulate organic matter, it being the immediate supplier of nitrogen for plants, and now this growing body of evidence that, although correlative and indirect at this point, does suggest this inherent nitrogen mineralization potential within mineral-associated organic matter. So to begin to address some of these discrepancies, we've developed a conceptual model in which mineral-associated organic matter is explicitly included as a potential source of nitrogen for plants. Really, it's an extension of the Schimmel and Bennett model, where we've broken soil organic matter up into three pools. We have an insoluble particulate organic matter pool, a soluble pool, and a mineral-associated pool, both of which have a polymeric and monomeric pool within them. There is this exchange that occurs between mineral-associated and soluble pool through these stabilization and destabilization pathways. this exchange that isn't really captured in a lot of models that we use today for soil nitrogen cycling. We also hypothesize that this exchange, this release of nitrogen from mineral-associated organic matter, is most significant specifically in the rhizosphere, so in this interaction zone between the soil, the root, and the microbial environment. In this environment, we know that these root inputs, these exudates such as glucose, organic acids, amino acids, can modify the microbial community and the chemical environment such that the rhizosphere is functionally distinct from the bulk soil. And we suspect that mineral-associated organic matter would be more vulnerable to these shifts in the bio and chemical properties. Some of the changes that we observe are shifts in soil solution composition and pH, dramatic shifts in the microbial community composition, increases in biomass and the overall activity of the microbial community, with, in general, we observe increases in enzyme production, and as a result, there can be observed also an increase in organic matter mineralization, which we often term the rhizosphere priming effect. So this stimulation of nitrogen and carbon transformation rates in the rhizosphere relative to the bulk soil. There's also this immense variation in mineral-organic associations, and especially in terms of the bonding strength between that organic compound and the mineral surface, where we can, yes, have some of these very strong covalent bonds, but we also have very weak associations, such as hydrogen bonds or electrostatic interactions, which can hold on to organic matter quite loosely. In some minerals, such as one-to-one clays or metal oxides, we also have a high proportion, or can have a high proportion, of pH-dependent charges. So this would have consequences in a rhizosphere environment where we see these pH changes. Within this conceptual framework, we also highlight two pathways to mineral-associated organic matter destabilization. One that is direct, where an organic acid such as oxalic acid will directly interfere with organomineral interactions and release nutrients into the soil solution. This has been shown in several studies now with respect to carbon, but it's less understood with respect to nitrogen. This indirect pathway is this classic kind of priming pathway of root exudates, especially these easily assimilable ones such as glucose, that stimulate the microbial community and activate a nutrient mining response within. So to begin to address some of our ideas in this conceptual framework, we've set up a lab incubation where I've physically isolated mineral-associated organic matter fractions. And the overall objective here was to examine whether the soil microbial response to simulated root exudates facilitates the release of mineral-bound nitrogen. So here again, I've physically isolated with particle size fractionation this mineral-associated organic matter fraction, added to it sterile sand so that in a jar the only source of carbon or nitrogen was that mineral-associated organic matter. I've added three separate treatments, a 13C-labeled glucose, 13C-labeled oxalic acid, and water in three distinct pulses, harvesting after each a subset. So we have one that received one, another two, and finally a third that received three total pulses of the substrate. Our hypotheses here are that this carbon substrates will stimulate a microbial mining response for nutrients from mineral-associated organic matter. And specifically, we would see an increase in CO2 respiration derived from mineral-associated organic matter, an increase in nitrogen and nitrogen-acquiring and oxidative enzyme activities, and the overall stimulatory effect, or this priming effect, would be greater in the glucose treatment. Using CO2 respiration as a proxy for microbial activity, we can see that the glucose treatments do elicit this kind of pulse, which is typical of glucose priming experiments. And oxalic acid instead shows this initial suppression in CO2 production. It does catch up eventually, and we see this incremental and slow increase in CO2 production. This lag may have to do with the community simply just adjusting to this new substrate and metabolizing this new substrate. Here, this graph is based on the 13C signature of the CO2 produced. So using that signature, I can derive how much of that CO2 was coming from the glucose or the oxalic acid that I added, or from the organic matter itself, from the mineral-associated organic matter, with the y-axis being the priming of mineral-associated organic matter, so it's relativized to the control. So the 50%, for example, is showing that it's respiring 50% more mineral-associated organic matter compared to the control. Again, here we see these pulses in glucose for the organic matter degradation, an initial suppression in the oxalic acid treatments, but overall there is a net priming, net positive priming that occurs here, indicating that the microbes are eventually turning away from the substrate to the mineral-associated organic matter to derive carbon and potentially nitrogen. In comparing the two treatments here, we see glucose-treated soils respired about 30% more of the mineral-associated organic matter, so it did have a larger overall stimulatory effect. And looking briefly at the enzymes here, I'm highlighting three, a carbon-acquiring, a nitrogen-acquiring, and an oxidative enzyme activity. We do see a significant increase stimulatory effect with the carbon-acquiring enzymes, not with this particular chitinase or this nitrogen-acquiring enzyme in the middle, but we do see a significant and the most dramatic stimulatory effect in the oxidative enzyme activities, especially in the oxalic acid treatments. Here, I found that interesting considering what we know now about oxidative enzymes not being produced only to attack, say, lignin compounds, but also to release nitrogen for more complex organic matter. And so it will be great to pair these data, the carbon and the enzyme data, with forthcoming gross nitrogen mineralization, which is on its way, along with quantifying the composition of the amino acid, the shifts following these substrate additions over time. And as well, I've set up an abiotic control where I've sterilized a subset through gamma irradiation, and I will quantify the nitrogen released by these organic acids specifically, but in the absence of a microbial community. So yeah, with that, I will thank you all for your time today. Especially, would like to thank members of the Granby Lab and my funding sources. In this case, I didn't do a protease assay, unfortunately. Although I, so along with this chitinase, have the tyrosine aminopeptidase, which I guess could be considered, but or goes after the protein bond, but and a tyrosine. Did I say tyrosine? Yes, and I believe alanine. Yeah.
Did those show responses?
Not significantly. It's really with the chitinase that was already on its own much higher than the other nitrogen-acquiring enzymes and showed it did show a significant response in another soil, so I've compared two soil types, just didn't have the time to show those results here. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Yeah, like plant microbial competition in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I that's one kind of other piece of this conceptual framework that I also didn't have time to think about or report here is just the implications for competition. And we argue that it would really be distinct, the competitive interactions within the rhizosphere, if mineral-associated organic matter is a significant source of nitrogen, where we believe it would be more of a cooperative interaction potentially, because there is this tight coupling between the carbon root inputs and the kind of degradation of organic matter by microbes. But we think it would be distinct from, say, you know, the interaction in a litter patch that's higher C to N, where plants are intercepting nitrogen that's being released and I don't know if that answers your question. So I'm really more cooperative than the true competitive interaction that might occur in other nutrient patches.
Do amino acids diffuse pretty well through the soil?
I believe so. In the studies that look at kind of either rates of desorption and movement through soil solution, and I think they generally do, my understanding.
Thank you.